When we left our adventure the last time, we had 3 geese left, having learned that getting 4 to protect the ducks was a stupid idea, as the geese required protection of their own. The next logical step would have been to add yet one more thing to the menu, something even slower and easier to catch, but still quite tasty for our unseen night stalker. Perhaps a few lame chickens with salt and pepper sprinkled over them already. Or better yet, dressed and cooked with a side of coleslaw, macaroni and cheese, or instant mashed potatoes with brown gravy. This solution hadn't occurred to me at the time, so instead we set about to find a way to help them survive without requiring our constant watchfulness. There was an old saying about teaching a man to fish that suggested that this might be a better way. So self-defense is the best defense. But geese lack fingers to be able to pull a shotgun trigger themselves, and even if they could, I have serious doubts about whether they would have good aim, and even more serious concerns about whether, once armed, they might foment a revolution among the ducks and turn weapons on their benevolent hosts, the geese blaming us for their general foul mood. I decided the best practical defense the geese could have beyond flight, a skill that the Chinese had so generously bred out of them over the course of hundreds of years, is water. On land, they're vulnerable, lumbering midnight meals, but on water, they're out of reach of nighttime predators. Other than fish, of course, and we haven't any fish big enough to eat a goose. And while I couldn't force them to stay on the water, I could at least give them the chance to make the right choice instead of dooming them to fight an unarmed battle on territory where they would have the strong disadvantage. Thus, for their own good, I determined to introduce the geese to the pond, hoping that their instincts would be better than those of the ducks, to whom we'd offered a similar defense. However, the idea of putting the geese out on the pond and the reality of getting them there were 2 different things. The approach that seemed the most promising was to guide them along the path until we reached the pond. So with the help of 3 boys, each of us with a long stick, I started out the exercise. Geese, it turns out, are not very compliant. They are just bold enough to run through the barriers you try to put in their way, tumbling over or pushing through the staff with which you're trying to turn them around. And once they're on the other side of the people who are trying to coax them forward, everything becomes chaos. Now they are easy to guide, as long as you're guiding them in the opposite way that you actually want them to go. It took us several runs through this basic scenario for me to figure out that if we continued this method, that chaos would be the natural state of things, and not an aberration. Thus, with exhaustion, we had to come up with another plan. The plan actually presented itself. We were following the geese, trying to get ahead of them so that we could guide them back in the other direction, when we found that we had trapped them, or rather, they had trapped themselves, in the corner where the side of the house meets a retaining wall. And in the flutter of feathers and the harangue of honks, we managed to catch all 3. Each of us who had a goose held one wing down with each hand and carried the heavy birds as quickly as we could. The geese were not very high either on this form of transportation or on having this proximity to us. The neck of a fully grown Chinese goose is a little longer than the distance between where the full-grown human can hold the body of said goose and the face of that human. A full-grown Chinese goose quickly realizes this, and after a few hisses and warnings, begins to bite the human face. This is really more of a startling thing than a dangerous one, as geese have no teeth and are unable to really get a very good grip. Nevertheless, it is an irritant, especially when your whole purpose in the first place is to help the goose. They also have this nasty practice of kicking with their feet, each with 3 talons considerably sharper than their bills. This experience provided proof that arming geese with shotguns would have likely caused exactly the kind of havoc that I feared. We managed to get the 2 brown and white birds all the way to the pond. The 3rd, the pure white one, with the bulbous orange bill sporting a protuberant knob, escaped from Ian's grip before we got very far, and returned to the house with the ducks. Once we got the 2 to the water, we tossed them in unceremoniously, and they began to swim. These geese seem wiser than the ducks I brought out a few episodes back. They seem to realize that safety is found by swimming, except when they know they are alone and they can search for food. They stay always far away from us. It's now a week later, and they both, each morning, have still been there. We've learned not to get our hopes up too high about this, lest we be too disappointed by their disappearance. This attitude makes each morning a little brighter because we can celebrate a little in our hearts that they are still alive, having primed ourselves for the possibility that they might not be. In this way, the brown geese have given us a life lesson about appreciating the small things that we look out on every day and think about how it's not as bad as it might have been. The white goose, however, stays closer to the house and is therefore less a source for positive inspiration than those who swim on the far side of the pond. Geese, I notice as I interact with this one, are like fish. They have an eye on each side of their heads and can't really look straight in front of them. This is a good thing, I suppose. If they had eyes situated like ours, they would forever be staring at their own noses, because the front of a Chinese goose is really little more than one gigantic nose with a big lump on the top. Was it this bird that was the inspiration for Edward Rosanne's play about the nasally endowed Cyrano de Bergerac? I think not, as I consider the question, for Cyrano was a man of many well-crafted words that flowed musically over his lips to carve a sculpture in the air. He was a poet who spoke poetry without labor, a soldier who disarmed his opponents by turn of phrase and by turn of sword. He was long of nose and long of soul, too, long of charm, long of heart, long of love. A goose, on the other wing, has but a single, repeated, discordant honk, and it is long of nothing but neck. You will never see, I think, a goose poet. Even if such creatures, one or two, might have existed in Rostrand's day, you would never find one now. Because poets now cannot be merely lyrical. They must also be able, like anyone who deals with words, to type. And if a goose had a computer, it would face a host of problems. Oh, I'm sure it could get around the difficulty of its feathers spreading out and hitting all the wrong keys, though its solution would inevitably involve the hunt and peck method. It would make such a clatter, a goose hitting the solid plastic letters with its hard orange bill. It would sound almost like a typewriter of those bygone days. So it isn't typing per se that would be the difficulty for the goose using the computer. It would be, I think, keeping track of all those passwords. I see no evidence that geese have good memories for random strings of numbers and letters. Yet, as to this, I must admit, it is a problem for me, too. A friend of mine had, until recently, a 1947 Ford pickup. It was built when they first started using keys. Earlier trucks just had a pedal on the floor that you stepped on to run the starter. This one, however, could be started only if you had a key. Some engineer figured that if you wanted only one person to be able to start the truck, you probably wanted only one person to be able to have access to the cab, too. So this engineer designed the doors to lock. And smart engineer that he was, he thought that the person who starts the truck is probably the exact same person who gets into the cab. Thus, he concluded, it was only the driver's door that needed to be able to be unlocked from the outside, and it was only that door that had a keyhole. Modern cars, I have seen this and not actually experienced it, offer a feature in the higher-end models of doors that unlock automatically when the owner gets close, or of starting them with just a button as long as the owner has an unlocking fob in his pocket. This was the sort of invention, I've concluded, that is exactly what a goose needs for a computer. A single fob that it can wear around its neck that could substitute for all of those passwords that it's got no good way to remember. Yet even then, I think a goose would not be a very good poet at all. For one thing, it would probably be angry all the time. This seems to be the personality of our goose. It's not the kind of anger that lashes out violently. It's more the kind that causes people to be rude to others over the telephone, or to habitually leave restaurants without leaving any tip at all, or to never think of going to a zoo. It's a brooding kind of anger, of temperament, not an anger of emotion. It's not the flash of anger you get when you meet someone just like you who acts toward you exactly the way you act toward everyone else. Nor is it the anger that arises when your plans, trivial though they were, and not all that important had you changed them yourself, get frustrated by someone else. A goose's anger is anger toward the whole of the world that comes within its personal space. A goose hates you not for anything you've done. A goose hates you because you exist. I'm a little surprised that people eat goose for Christmas dinner. I would think it might be a very bitter. Perhaps geese have got good meat because all of their bitterness they've gotten out of them, and it hasn't had the chance to really sink in. I've never eaten goose, so I really can't say either way with any authority. There are, of course, many people who have different tastes than I, and I recognize this. This is particularly true, I think, in poetry, so perhaps I'm mistaken about how good a poet a goose would be. Many people seem to like bitter and angry poetry that honks at you discordantly, though I suspect that many more pretend to like such poetry because they think that they should if they're going to present themselves as people of sophistication. And this, of course, is the core vice of the Chinese goose. They don't seem to realize that they're just big flightless birds with a lump on their bills. Consider this in regard to the difference between a duck and a goose. Ducks are perfectly happy waddling about with cute little quacking sounds fitting their assigned place in the animal kingdom. Geese, though, make far too large a sound for who they are. They must announce themselves to anyone within earshot. Ducks inspire cartoon characters like Donald and Daffy because ducks are both inherently funny and can laugh at themselves. There are many jokes that begin, "A duck walked into a bar." I have yet to hear any about a goose walking into such a place. Geese inspire not that happy-go-lucky expression like water off a duck's back, but the considerably less pleasant, "Your goose is cooked." It's true that it was this sort of bird that engendered the expression silly goose, but silly is much less complimentary than funny. Geese are silly precisely because they are not funny, and steadfastly refuse to acknowledge that they should be. And this is the core of silliness, to refuse to accept the obvious.